on.
Back to Wagner. Catch and shoot three on the way. Rims it home. Couple of threes for Michigan. Wagner with his 60th of the year. Simmons right side for Matthews. Decks it and drives. Leans. Got some contact. Hit it, and he's fouled.
Charles Matthews, the aggressor.
Launches a three. It's short. Rebound Wagner. He'll put it back up. Up the small square and through. Wagner's having himself a day deep inside. Left-handed dribble drive. Floater from the left baseline. No good. Rebound. Ingram. Put back is good. Nobody boxed him out. And Loyola's got the momentum. And the crowd behind him. Robinson touch pass. Simmons in the corner for three. Good. Jerron Simmons knocks it down. His sixth triple of the year. And Michigan pulls to within six. Rebound Rockmont, quick to Robinson, back to Rockmont left corner, to Robinson on the wing, strokes a three, nails the three. Big triple from Duncan Robinson. He's got two of them in the half, and Michigan's down three. Force feeds Wagner, right short corner. A double team comes, he dribbles away from it, step back three, get in there, got it! Tied up at 47 because Mo Wagner continues to carry the load. To Wagner, open for three, didn't want it, bounce pass from Matthews, slithers inside, and a reverse layup is good, and a timeout for Porter Moser. Michigan starting to run their offense to perfection. Simpson into the front court. Gives it to Matthews. Underhand leave. Poole eyes the three. Missed it short. Wagner with a follow-up. It's good, and he's fouled. Kick out. Wagner straightaway three. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Mo Wagner has been huge here today.
Poole comes up with it. Michigan is going to win it. They'll have the last dance in San Antonio and play for a title Monday night. They beat Loyola 69-57.
We're elated to get a win like that. And the way we did it, you know, we see some really good defenses in the Big Ten. We saw some great defense. They're a little bit smaller at the forward positions, and they can really get into you and guard. And they really gave us problems in the first half. But the second half, after we saw how their actions, then we needed to make some shots. And we couldn't make them for a while when we did. And our young guys came in there. All of a sudden, we took off like crazy. Everybody's really happy. We're ready to move on to the next game. I don't know if they had magic on their side. They're good. They wouldn't be here if they were not good. In the NCAA tournament, everybody's on a neutral floor. They don't get the opportunity to play home games against schools like Michigan, and they probably never will. So as a result, they're good, but people don't know how good they are until you see them out there. They stopped being a Cinderella when they got to the 16, to me. There's so little difference between the 4 seed and the 13 seed. It's much smaller a difference than you would think, than numbers.
I thought Loyola Chicago had a chance to win the ball game. They were in the ball game, but the reality of the matter is Michigan is way more talented. They were 1 of 10 from the 3-point line today and still found a way to win the game by double digits. That says something about the talent of Michigan.
We might be put in tougher positions with the way Michigan plays defense. We've got to figure out a way to move without the ball to create space to be able to do that. The first time you walk out there, it is breathtaking. It really is. When all the lights go out and they do the introductions and you just see the crowd, it's your heart's pumping. I hope against Michigan that when the lights go out and that awesome pregame gets going, that it's not as overwhelming as it was in 16.
Michigan plays a physical brand of defense. They do a great job of running you off the three-point line, and they're a very good defensive rebounding team. But it's going to be a unique challenge taking on Villanova, because Villanova can shoot it from five different spots on the floor all the time. And they've got five guys that have made over 50 threes on the season. And that's going to be the real challenge. Is Mo Wagner, the big guy for Michigan, going to be able to guard out on the floor all game long? Because he's going to have to chase somebody like Eric Paschal or Omari Spellman all game long. If Villanova shoots it anywhere near like they did against Kansas, I think it's going to be all she wrote. Michigan's going to have to do a better job than Kansas did of getting off to a better start, and certainly they're going to have to run the Wildcats off that three-point line, because they are deadly from the three-point line.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. Good Monday to you, second day of the month of April in the year of our Lord 2018. Hope you had a wonderful Easter celebration or Passover or whatever it is that you did do, but we're glad to have you for Championship Monday. It all comes down to tonight. And suffice it to say that the experts don't think there will be a women's Final Four-type last-second shot victory for anybody in this game tonight. I tell you what, I oftentimes, it might sound really mean to say I make fun of women's basketball. I kind of make fun of the WNBA, for its existence. I make fun of that because it's, you know, it's comical. I mean, how bad it is, how they only exist because of the NBA funding it. They don't draw enough. They don't make enough money. They don't draw enough fans. They don't have enough money coming in on their own contracts, et cetera, for media and so on and so forth to subsist. That's why the players make a fraction of what the NBA players make. And sometimes they complain, we should be paid equally. No, you shouldn't. Nobody watches. I make fun of the WNBA for its existence and how it's, you know, and its subsistence based on the men. I have talked about how women's college basketball isn't as entertaining to watch in large part because, you know, the outcome is so predetermined. UConn, 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 UConn. But for the second year in a row, UConn was upset in the Final Four. A stunner. And so you take that element out of it. And if you take, you know, like I said, those have been my two main critiques about women's basketball. The WNBA as a league, not just women playing basketball. And then in women's college basketball, the UConn thing, where it's just such a predetermined outcome and it's so boring, they're beating everybody by 60, that you just don't really want to pay attention. And now you find out, well, maybe you should have because they didn't win. So I have taken some shots at women's basketball in that way, but not just women playing basketball. Like girls high school basketball, I support them 100%. I have absolutely no problem whatsoever in girls college basketball too, women's as they call it, no problem at all. But I will tell you what, despite any criticisms I may have made, that was spectacular. The Notre Dame National Championship on back-to-back buzzer beaters from, I don't even know how to pronounce her last name. Kushlin, you want to take that shot? You're doing the sports updates.
Oh, jeez.
you can't do it either. And I know you can. And I heard the announcers during the game, right, at least in the highlights, kind of just like sloughing it through. It's kind of like, oh, gobelinlie. It's hard to do. But anyway.
I've done that with hockey names that are very Eastern European in the past, not going to lie.
And how can you not, right? I mean, how can you not? But anyway, what drama. What an unbelief. Give the ladies a round of applause, seriously, because that is spectacular. Watching what they did and the drama of that tournament. If the men, let's put it to you this way. If the men can find a way to bring one half of that excitement to the championship game tonight, the way they did at the end of that last night, they will be doing very well. So to the ladies, I want to give them...
Can you dig
yeah,
it?
Okay. Yeah, indeed. Well-earned and well-deserved. I want to give them credit for the drama that they finished their March Madness with yesterday with that Notre Dame title. Now, most of the experts are suggesting, no, not even anywhere close to that tonight. As a matter of fact, to listen to them tell it, does Michigan need to show tonight? Is it something they should bother spending time with? Should they just kind of hop the early flight back to Ann Arbor? Because they can't play with Villanova. They don't have a chance against Villanova. I am looking, and I've been listening today, too, to some of the national shows and reading some of the national columnists and watching some of the national television analysts on various networks, not just on ESPN, but on CBS and Fox and in other places. And I haven't found anybody yet who's picking Michigan. It's kind of weird. It's kind of bizarre. I haven't found anybody who's picking Michigan except one. Paul Biancardi is one of the experts who weighed in on the national championship game for Michigan. I don't have an explanation of his. But his name stands out because his is the only one with a great big maze block M next to it. Everybody else has the big blue V on the expert predictions for the national title game. And I'm talking 1, 2, 3, just, no, there's too many. It's got to be 20. They got to have 20, 25 people here. And I'm just reading you the names. These are ESPN predictions. Andrew Adelson, Edward Ashoff, Jay Billis. Some of the names you'll know, some of them names you won't. Dan Dockich, you know Dan Dockich, of course. Jimmy Dykes, Sean Farnham, John Gassaway, Dino Guido, Guadio, Jeff Goodman, Seth Greenberg, You know him, Cush.
Oh, yeah.
David Hale, let's see, Adam Rittenberg, Mark Schlabach. You probably know that name. John Thompson III,
mm-hmm.
LaFonso Ellis, Dan Murphy. So some names a little bit more familiar than others. And I mean 24 out of 25 at that nine. I didn't count them all. 19 out of 20, whatever the number is, say Villanova. And most of them don't say Villanova close. Villanova by 10, Villanova by 10, Villanova by 8, Villanova by 12, Villanova, what's 71 to 58? That's 13. Here's one, Villanova by 5, a little bit more reasonable. Villanova, by a deuce. Jimmy Dyke says by a deuce, 72 to 70, but the vast majority say this is going to be a blowout.
And the Vegas line, for what it's worth, is Villanova by 7 or 6.5 or whatever it was.
6.5 earlier today. If it moved, okay.
I'm seeing 7, so it may have moved.
Okay, good. Yeah, this morning it was 6.5 when I had heard them, so I don't know. So maybe it moved to 7. But Jay Will, by the way, Jay Williams was one of those on ESPN television today saying, look, congratulations to Michigan for stopping Loyola's run. Congratulations to Mo Wagner for having a monster performance, and it truly was a Final Four performance for the ages. And we'll have part of that in our Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat coming up. He did some amazing things against Loyola and really just willed a team that could not shoot, that did not get enough from enough guys, especially in the first half, to even be competitive, really, as they trailed by 10. Mo Wagner was just a monster. But Jay Will said, despite all of what they did, you look at that Villanova team and what they were able to do to just completely dissect and take apart a top seed like Kansas, Villanova is going to walk to this victory. It will not be an entertaining game. It will be a blowout. So that's what the experts are saying, like I said, almost unanimously, maybe not quite, but almost unanimously. And I am here to tell you from our locale in Northwest Ohio, not too far from Ann Arbor, that Michigan damn well is going to be in that game tonight. And I'll tell you something else. I think every one of those experts is probably right.
Like how you build that up just to let us all down.
I gotta tell you, Jim, after the excitement of the Michigan game, exciting for Michigan fans, obviously, because they're there and they won, but excitement in terms of how close it was, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Michigan comeback from being absolutely atrocious offensively in the first half, except for Wagner. And
I'll admit, me, Bob, at halftime, I'm like, is this really going to happen? Are we really going to be watching Loyola on Monday night? I thought that at halftime.
So did I. Well, I stuck with my pick. I picked Michigan.
As did I.
My son. And my son picked Loyola. And my wife was rooting for Loyola as we watched this game for simple reason, you know, like most of America. Most of America, not in Ann Arbor, was rooting for Loyola because it's the Cinderella underdog thing. You know, the little tiny school, Sister Jean, and the whole nine yards. Everybody loved that thing. So that's fine. I picked Michigan, and I was hoping Michigan would win as well. I support the Big Ten. And I support our listeners and fans of the Wolverines. So that was easy for me. But not only was I cheering for them, I picked them. And my son was all up in my grill, you know, down 10 at half. Or he was up 10 at half because he had Loyola. And he asked me, are you changing your pick? And I said, no, I'm good. And it was, I don't know, probably around 15, 14, 13 minutes to go. It was still Loyola by 8, I want to say.
Yeah.
And he said, you changing your pick? And I said, no, I'm going to roll with it. And I said, ask me again when we're at the 10-minute mark, by the way. And when we were at the 10-minute mark, it was still Loyola by 7 or 8. And I said, I'm staying with it through the game, through the end of the game. Michigan's going to win this game. And they hadn't really had a massive run at that particular point in time, but they just looked, I don't know. Well, it wasn't so much how they looked offensively that was so terribly different at that point. It was how much different Loyola looked. All of the turnovers that Michigan was committing in the first half, Loyola was committing in the second half. They weren't getting the looks that they got. And when they did, they weren't hitting the shots that they took like they did in the first half. The Michigan defense put some clamps on, and Loyola did not handle it well. And then Michigan, obviously, as we got especially into the final 10 minutes of the second half, final 10 minutes of the game, they really started to hit some shots. Other guys besides Wagner started to step up. And when they started to close the gap, and as soon as they tied it, I told my son, I said, what did I tell you? It's over. And, you know, he didn't want to buy it. And then, of course, there was like 30. He said, talk to me when there's 30 seconds left. And I said, yeah, it's 30 seconds left. Michigan's up six. You got something to say? And he, like, punched me or something. I don't know. But he did not like it. But anyway, the point to all of this is, as fun and exciting as that game was, the evening game, the second game from San Antonio, was a snooze fest. Why? Villanova just punched Kansas in the mouth. I mean, this is like, you know, if this had been a championship fight, you know, they didn't come out jab, jab, kind of stick and move a little bit, see what the other one's got. They came out throwing haymakers and connecting. And Kansas was, what the hell just happened? And how are we down 22-5 right now? I mean, it was over before it began. They started throwing bombs early. And in the case of basketball, bombs are reflected in the form of three-pointers. And it just continued that way all night long. It was boring. And I have to tell you, as the game went on, and I, you know, we obviously knew what the outcome was going to be. There was no way Kansas was coming back in that game. I started doing the, let's see how Michigan matches up with them. And I can't wait to see Omari Spellman and Mo Wagner. Boy, that should be fantastic, because Spellman is a great 3-point shooter for a big, and he's also a tremendous inside player. And Wagner, well, Wagner was just King Kong in the semi against Loyola. That's going to be, and he can also step outside, has a great 3-point shot, even though it was off for a lot of the tournament before Saturday night. But Wagner and Spellman, and I'm looking at the matchups, and I'm starting to think, you know, how this is going to play out. And the sad truth of the matter is, in my opinion, with the exception of that Wagner-Spellman matchup, which we're going to see, I think every advantage goes to the Wildcats. They are a better starting five. They are much deeper. And more importantly, what did they do 2 years ago? They were here and they won this thing. They got guys on that roster who know how it feels. They know what the lights are like. They know what the crowd sounds like. They know what the pressure is. And I'm not talking about, you know, Final Four pressure. That was a different animal on Saturday. Certainly the Final Four on Saturday was a different animal for Michigan than was the regional final, for example, out in Los Angeles. It's a different feel when you're in the Final Four. In the same manner, when you're in the championship game as opposed to the national semis, I think it's an entirely different feel. When I hear Jay Wright talk about that, and when I hear others who have been in that position before, I think to myself, who is going to be able to adjust physically, mentally, and emotionally to their surroundings faster? And when the team that doesn't adjust faster to it and is taken aback a little bit by it and rushes some shots because of it and gets a little lost on defense because of it and has their heads swimming in a billion camera lights, flashing before their eyes, and sounds that they've never heard before, the team that isn't on it first, do they have the firepower to come back? And in my estimation, I feel like these national writers, analysts, broadcasters, all of whom, I mean, probably 99%, just based on my own observations, watching various networks today and listening to various networks and again, reading now from ESPN.com, 24 out of their 25 people who pick Villanova, I have a hard time arguing with them. If Michigan isn't prepared for the night, you can fall behind by 10 to Loyola and come back. And they did. You fall behind by 10 to Villanova, you have dug yourself your own grave. It is only a matter of how deep it's going to be by the time you're done. Villanova is not going to relent. Villanova is not going to start turning it over. Villanova has enough depth that if they did start turning it over and did start missing shots, etc., they're bringing somebody else who's coming in as a blue chipper who's going to pick that slack up. I think Michigan has done a remarkable job getting to the national championship game. I just don't think they have the horses. And based on their performances in the postseason, particularly offensively in this tournament, you know, not having the offense clicking on every cylinder, which it really needs to be, you know, you might be able to do that and get by against Montana. you might be able to do that and get by on a game winner by a pool against Houston. You might be able to do that and get by against another team that isn't necessarily deep with talented scorers like Florida State. And you might be able to come back on Loyola. Villanova is a different beast. And I think the run, magical as it may be, the second opportunity for John Beilein in the last 5 years in a national championship game is sadly destined to finish in the same way. And I will tell you this, too. I didn't know this, Jim, and I probably could have saved this for one of the many wild stats that you give me. But Michigan is 1-6 all-time in national championship games. Only the Seton Hall victory in 1989, sealed by Romeo Robinson with two free throws on a disputed call at the end. Their only national championship game victory. They have had six other bites at the apple, and they have not won any of them. None of that has anything to do with these current players, of course. Just kind of pointing it out there. I just feel like the drought is going to continue a little bit for Michigan in championship games.
It does sadly feel that way. I mean, everything on paper suggests that Villanova should win going away. I'm not sure if it's going to be any kind of blowout either. I've heard some suggesting that. I do think Michigan.
Yeah, Jay Will was really, really, what's the word I'm looking for on that? He was just very certain about that. He was almost obstinate when anybody would argue with him about it. He said, just Michigan can't hang with these guys. It's not going to be close.
Yeah, but outside of that, I don't think it's going to be any kind of a blowout or anything. I do think Michigan will hang in there, but the logic part of my brain tells me to pick Villanova for this one tonight. Either way, though, win or lose, the fact that this is the second national championship game that John Beilein has been at the helm of Michigan for, I do want to start wondering out loud. We'll have more time, obviously, later with some of our guests on this one, Bob, is how should Michigan fans view John Beilein in terms of being the head basketball coach? Is he the best that Michigan has had in terms of the basketball court as head coach? I don't know, but I think things like this need to be start being brought up.
You mean the best Michigan basketball coach in Michigan basketball history?
Correct. That's what I'm trying to say, yes.
Okay. I don't know the real old history as well as perhaps I should, you know, going back into, you know, the 60s and 50s eras or 40s even. I just don't know. When I think back to the only other coach, the only Michigan coach to win a championship, of course, that was Steve Fisher. And Steve Fisher was well known for winning that in 89 with Bill Frieder's team, because Bill Frieder was the head coach who decided he was going to take the Arizona State job,
right,
and made that announcement right before the tournament and said, don't worry, though, I'll coach the team through the tournament. And Bo Schembechler, then athletic director, said,
right,
the hell you will. A Michigan man is going to coach the Michigan team. So he told Frieder to get an early start on his Arizona State trip and said Steve Fisher will take over.
People always seem to forget that part of the story, by the way.
Yeah, and so Steve Fisher, his first head coach or game as a head coach of the Michigan Wolverines was the first game of the tournament. And all he did was lead that team, headlined by Glenn Rice, Romeo Robinson, Loy Vaught, Terry Mills, Sean Higgins. I remember it well. Lead them to six straight wins and the national championship. Now, that was in 1989, and then, of course, he had a couple of nice years, obviously not championship years, in 90 and 91, something special happened. He went and recruited, after the 91 season, a bunch of guys that would come to be known as the Fab Five. So Steve Fisher did some pretty good things in winning a championship and then recruiting the Fab Five that took them to a pair of title games. They did not win, obviously. And then, of course, we know that some of that history had to be erased by the meddling is the word I'm looking for, of certain boosters and donors and whatnot to the organization or to the program. But Steve Fisher is right up there, I would suppose. But John Beilein, for having this extended run of success, and I'll tell you this, Jim, if he can cash one in and win a championship, then I think maybe we end the discussion right there.
As do I. And that's part of the reason, you know, I'm bringing it up. And I'm looking at his run so far as overall as Michigan coach. He was first hired in 07-08. That was, needless to say, a down year. They were 10-22. But since then, it's lost in the second round, Then it, an under 500 season, then four straight tournament appearances, one of them the other title game they lost in 2013, which, of course, since the whole Louisville thing earlier this year, we've all been having way too much fun with that one. And then these last couple of years, and now in another national championship game, and it's one of the more – what's the word I'm looking for? It's one of the more continued successes for overall Michigan basketball is, you know, I'm looking this up. I mean – you know, after the Fab Five all left, Michigan kind of fell down, and there was like an almost 10-year gap where they were kind of bad, actually. That Frieder team that won the national title.
I don't know. I got to go back and look. I don't know if I would have call it bad. Because he had, you know, again, he had some really good recruiting classes after the Fab Five. And he had some really solid programs, and while they weren't Final Four worthy, and I'm just trying to remember when. Let me look at the Sweet 16 runs. They came in 92 and 93. Again, those were Fab Fivers.
Mm-hmm.
Then 94, and then yeah, they didn't.
And that's with everybody in the Fab
Five
except Weber.
They didn't make the Sweet 16 again until the 2013 year. But I just remember a lot of talent. You know, when they were out there getting the likes of Robert Tractor Trailer.
Yeah.
And, for goodness sakes, the names are eluding me now, but he really followed up the successful recruiting of the Fab Five with some other top blue chip prospects. But you're right. I guess they didn't make enough deep runs into the tournament to classify. I wouldn't call them bad, but they just weren't as successful as I
I'm more thinking of the Brian Ellerby and Tommy Amaker years between Steve Fisher and John Beilein.
Oh, okay.
One grand
I thought
total.
You were talking about Fisher's years.
No. I mean, after the Fab Five left, they lost a couple of first rounds and then had a 24-win NIT season. And then those things came to a head, and that's when Fisher was sent packing, you know, at Michigan. The Bill Frieder years, that 89 team was the pinnacle for the Bill Frieder years. I lost the title game in 76 under Johnny Orr. Lost another title game under Dave Strack in 65, but they really weren't the extended type runs that Beilein's teams have been on.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
I'm just wondering out loud, win or lose this one tonight,
he deserves that credit. Like I said, I think he can end that conversation and put a punctuation mark at the end of it if he's able to pull this thing off tonight. All right, we got a lot to do here, so let me get caught up a little bit. Coming up in a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to, in fact, we're going to talk to two different writers from both sides of the national championship game perspective tonight. Eugene Rappe is going to join us, managing editor of VU. That would be Villanova, not Virginia. VUhoops.com from San Antonio, site of the championship game, will join us here in a couple of minutes. And then later next hour, Trevor Woods from MaizeAndBrew.com will join us with a preview from that side, that perspective of things. We'll do all of that. First, though, we have to get a bottom of the hour sports center after we get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
In the interest of time here, I'm just going to go to use only one of these. I may reference the other ones. I mentioned Mo Wagner, who exploded in the semifinal against Loyola of Chicago, finished with 24 points and 15 rebounds in that win. That makes him the third player ever to go for 20-plus points and 15-plus rebounds in a Final Four game. The other two, not bad. Hall of Famer Larry Bird did it in 79, and Akeem Olajuwon did it in 1983 for Phi Slamma Jamma Houston. So those are your top three performances of 20-plus and 15-plus in Final Four history. That's our Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. We'll get a Sports Center and come right back here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, rolling right along. We are at 3:43. Thanks for being with us. Don't forget, your next opportunity for $1,000 comes at 6 o'clock. It's the 4K-a-day giveaway from The Ticket every day, four times, 9 a.m., noon, 3 p.m., and 6 p.m. You have a shot at $1,000 by texting the keyword you hear at that time to 95819. 95819 for a shot at $1,000. Four times a day. The next time, 6 o'clock, right here on The Ticket. All right, I want to stay on the national championship scene. As a matter of fact, stay on the theme and get to the scene, because that's where our next guest is coming to us from, live from San Antonio. Eugene Rappe is the managing editor at VUhoops.com. VU, of course, would be Villanova. And, Eugene, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate you joining us here in Toledo, Ohio. How are you?
I'm great. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. I really wanted to get a look at the unbelievable Villanova Wildcats. What an amazing performance. You know, it's funny. We expected our best games, you know, in this very strange tournament in which so many lower seeds, 11 seeds and 9 seeds and 7 seeds, advanced to the Sweet 16, even into the Elite 8. And obviously we had an 11 seed in Loyola get into the Final Four. We expected our best basketball games would come when we have two top seeds going at one another, and Villanova and Kansas gave us that opportunity. But, man, not even a challenge. They came out swinging in the early going. I mean, really right out of the gate. Built up a lead of 22-5, I think, at one point, and it was never even a contest after that. How surprised were you by the blitz that Villanova, particularly from outside the arc, that they were able to put on the Jayhawks?
Totally shocked. I think we all expected a great dogfight, especially between two great teams. And then to see Villanova get off to a start like that, I guess it's what happens when Kansas lets them have these great looks and they punish the Jayhawks for having all these wide-open looks, and you had many different players able to sink their threes.
Yeah, you're right, and it wasn't just one guy. I mean, I'm just looking at that box score from that game, too. You know, every starter scored in double figures, 18-15 and 2-10. The number of threes made, I mean, every starter hit multiple threes. You know, Booth and Bridges had two each, but then three for Brunson and three for Spellman and four for Pascal, and just a blitz. I mean, you know, Kansas obviously was made to pay that price, but has this been the calling card? I haven't watched Villanova as closely all season long as we are in this tournament. Has this been their calling card all season long? Are they proficient on a regular basis in filling it up from deep?
Yeah, Villanova loves the three ball. It's something that Jay Wright loves. They have a saying called the shoot 'em up, sleep in the streets, that even when you're not making them, you got to believe in your three-point shot, shoot it with confidence, and take off from deep and let it fly. And when Villanova's cooking like they did on Saturday night, it's going to be a long day for their opponent.
Yeah, they took 40 of them, just to kind of key, if you're scoring at home, they took 40 threes, did the Wildcats, in the game over Kansas. So coming in, what about the defensive side? I mean, and maybe it's because Kansas felt the pressure early, because Villanova was so hot early, that they had to come down and maybe do some things that were uncharacteristic, maybe get shots off earlier in the clock than perhaps they would like. But, you know, the Wildcats offense wasn't the only part of that game, the only story. They really shut down the Jayhawks defensively.
Yeah, Villanova defensively has gotten better throughout the tournament, especially. They've seemed to really been doing a good job of not letting the other team do what makes them comfortable. Like, for example, Azubuike didn't really get to do much, and we know that he is that big man post threat on both ends of the court. He didn't really get comfortable at all on the offensive side of the floor. But as for Villanova, that defensive effort has really picked it up, especially at the right time, March and now April.
We are talking with Eugene Rapay, the managing editor at VUHoops.com, talking about the number one Villanova Wildcats, now 35-4 after blitzing Kansas in the semifinal game. They'll take on Michigan tonight for the national championship. Eugene, our man Jim Kushtland is here alongside me. He's got a question for you, Jim.
You know, and this isn't really unnecessarily some of the ins and outs and the X's and O's, if you will, of this game, but, you know, kind of piggybacking on something that Bob and I were discussing last segment. We're here in a Michigan territory. We're discussing how Michigan fans, you know, should view John Beilein. The flip side, though, is what Jay Wright has been able to do at Villanova all these years now, starting when he came over from Hofstra in 2001, 2002. I mean, I'm looking at just his one loss record and things like that at Villanova. I'm seeing nothing but NCAA tournaments, three total Final Four appearances, of course, the championship back in 2016. And I can't remember, guys, who it was over the weekend. And I'm going to get parts of what it wrong, but the gist of it was, when are we going to start mentioning Jay Wright in the same breath of college coaches that we do when we talk about Roy Williams or Coach K or Bill Self, who the Villanova, of course, just beat as those top college coaches? And it's true. Usually whenever we go through that list, Jay Wright's name almost never comes up. Is it time to change that?
You know, I think if Villanova is able to pull off the victory tonight and win their second national championship in 3 years, he's definitely going to be a part of that conversation. Right now, he's the program's winningest coach, beating Massimino, beating Jack Kraft, beating some other greats that have taken the head coaching position at Villanova. If Jay Wright can win another national championship tonight, there's no reason why he shouldn't be in the conversation, especially considering, you know, early on in his career, there was a lot of stigma surrounding his early exits, round of 32 losses. But if Villanova does pull off the win tonight, that should easily outdo it, and he should be a part of that conversation.
I might have to disagree with both of you guys, because I was going to disagree with Jim right out of the chute there, but where do you not hear his name already being mentioned in those? I interviewed somebody on Friday's show, and I asked about that matchup. I said, are these two, I should say, going into that game, the matchup of number ones, are Jay Wright and Bill Self arguably the two very best coaches working in the game today? And I said that as a fan of Coach K, a huge fan of Coach K, in fact. I'm not as big of a fan of Calipari, but I do recognize the good things that he has done, also the problems he has had in the past, too. And Roy Williams, and, you know, you can go down the list of some other guys. But I kind of feel like Jay Wright has already stamped his ticket, if you will, you know, to that place of special coaches that are currently, maybe, you know, if you want to get into history and you want to get into the Woodens and the Knights and the other people, now we have a different chat. But as far as active coaches today, do you not think he's already getting that recognition?
I think he's starting to, but it's not there yet. Right now, with Villanova being this quote-unquote new Big East, it kind of makes, for some college basketball fans out there, they don't really feel that Villanova's right there with Coach K, with Bill Self, with Izzo, with all these great blue bloods. You know, there's some people who don't think that Villanova is a blue blood program yet, and I think Jay Wright, you know, he's definitely one of the best coaches right now in the game, and he's definitely up there, but I think winning another national championship would firmly put him in that conversation without any doubt for some people, for the people who are still naysayers or the people who are still don't believe in him.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm trying to figure it out why there would be that stigma that he's still trying to overcome. Trying to find his stats real quick. 418 and 165 as the head coach. That's a 717 winning percentage. You know, he's got Sweet 16s and Final Fours, or I'm sorry, Elite Eights and Final Fours, and now and a championship. And if he gets a second one here, I mean, yeah, this is clearly, I don't know. I feel like they are blue blood, you know, Eugene, and maybe, you know, that's a little humility talking from your side as a Villanova guy and a Villanova fan and the managing editor. But I don't know. When I think of today's college basketball landscape, I think of Villanova as a blue blood. They never surprise me when I see their name in preseason top fives. It never surprises me to see them in the Elite Eight or in the Final Four either. And I think that's kind of the, for example, I was surprised to see Michigan in the Final Four and in the national championship game. Jim and I, Kushlin and I, had a conversation earlier in this tournament about whether or not they're a blue blood. And, you know, they're still a football school first and a basketball school second, and they're not really blue blood level, but and that's why I'm a little surprised. I feel like Villanova kind of has already achieved that title, and it really doesn't surprise me at all to see how successful that they are.
Yeah, when Villanova lost last year in the round of 32 to Wisconsin, there were a number of people who felt that, you know, 2016 was a fluke or it was a lucky break, especially with the Chris Jenkins buzzer beater. I think that by Jay Wright reaching another Final Four and his Wildcats having another nice deep run, I think that he should be in that conversation. And it's good to see that there are people out there like yourself who do think that he does deserve to be alongside some of the great coaches in the conversation in the game right now. But a second national title in 3 years would definitely be great for his legacy.
Well, he's been there since what? Since 2001, I think?
Yep. 01, 02 was his first season.
All right. So yes, he's got Sweet 16s in 05, 06, 08, 09, 16, and 18. So that's what? That's six times in what is now 17 seasons he's been to the Sweet 16. To the Elite Eight, 1, 2, 3, 4 of those years. And obviously to the Final Four now twice and a championship game twice. So. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm a little soft. I'm sorry, Final Four three times. Beg your pardon. That's right, 09, 16, and then 18. and then to the championship game in 16 and 18. Maybe I'm going soft in my old age, but I feel like this guy, Jay Wright, has earned that. I think he has turned this into a blue blood program. But we'll see what happens tonight. Eugene, let's get back to the court and quickly talk about what the great job that Villanova's defense did against a big foreign-born seven-footer as a bouquet. Now it's another big foreign-born center in the German Mo Wagner, who had just a monster game. He had had kind of an underwhelming NCAA tournament prior to the semifinal game against Loyola, but then he just exploded for 24 and 15. How does Villanova plan to deal with Wagner?
That's a great question, and I was talking to Ashley Howard, the assistant coach, in, you know, how do you stop a guy like Wagner? And he said it's very different, especially with Azubuki. You know, he was a traditional back-to-basket center, stay in the post, but with Wagner, he can do a number of different things. He's very versatile. One thing that Villanova does have is they have their own versatile center with Omari Spellman. You know, he's another big guy who can back down, post up, and score inside, but he can also take his game, stretch out the floor, as we saw as he did against Kansas. And I think with Villanova, it might have to be fight fire with fire, and using Spellman, hopefully being able for him to negate what Wagner can do. But Wagner, woof. In that Loyola-Chicago game, I thought he was the X factor and definitely the reason why they won. He really took over in that second half.
Spellman is a straight-up beast. He is a phenomenal. He's only a redshirt freshman, right, Omari Spellman?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he had 15 and 13 in that game. He has got three-point range for days. He has got power inside. He's throwing shots all over the place. He had three blocks. I think that is going to be the matchup to watch. In fact, you know, dare I say, Spellman, if he's at his best, and Wagner, if he's at his dominance that he was at, you know, the level that he was at in the Loyola game, could very well cancel one another out, putting this game into the hands of some other people. And let me ask you about that, particularly from the point guard position. Michigan's Xavier Simpson just had an atrocious game in the semifinal. He played 26 minutes, did not score, 0 for 6, 0 for 3 from 3. Did have three assists, but he countered those with four turnovers. You match him up with a backcourt like Brunson and Hedges, Bridges, and I just wonder if that isn't really the biggest advantage that Michigan is going to have to overcome, is that point guard disparity.
The point guard disparity, but also the way that Villanova shoots the three. You have guys 1 through 5, they can all launch it from deep. But on the other hand, you know, you look at what Michigan's done defensively throughout the season. They've been fantastic. One of the best defenses in college basketball. And the other thing that I think the Wolverines do very well is they run their opponents off the three-point line, not only limiting them, keeping their opponents to a low three-point shooting percentage, but they also don't allow their opponents to really take that many takes from beyond the arc. If you look at it, they hold their opponents to the fifth lowest three-point attempts throughout the whole season, and I think that's going to be something key to watch because Villanova obviously loves the three. They have a great talent in Brunson who also can shoot it, but I think the true challenge here will be how Michigan handles Villanova overall with so many different shooters out there.
We are talking with Eugene Rapay of VUHoops.com. He's the managing editor for that SB Nation site in support of Villanova basketball. Jim Cushion's got one more for you, Jimmy.
And from that Villanova perspective, Eugene, we're still trying to learn some of these guys ahead of this one tonight. What are Michigan fan listeners know if there's an X-factor type guy on Villanova that the Wolverines should watch out for? Who is he?
It's honestly hard to pinpoint a different guy because as we've seen in this tournament, Brunson obviously stands out as the National Player of the Year, Villanova's first ever player to ever win such a distinction, win such an honor. But then you look at Phil Booth, he's a guy that has shined in the big moments before. He had 20 points in the last national championship game. He didn't get to play last year, and this year he's back. He's more of a third or fourth option, but he's a great defender. And then Mikhail Bridges, he's looking like an NBA lottery pick, and with the way that he plays defensively and can score, he's another guy to watch out for. And Pascal, his game against Kansas was monstrous. He was almost perfect on the floor, 10 for 11, 4 for 5 from deep, and he's really starting to pick up his play. So it's really pick your poison. I don't think the X factor is really a single player, but more so whether or not Villanova can take and make its threes and also contain Wagner.
I was watching and listening to analysts all over the spectrum today, and Eugene, and I was only able to find one person who picked Michigan to win this game. It is, I mean, we're talking 99% of the analysts and broadcasters and writers who cover college basketball say Nova walks to a championship. Most of them say it's not going to be close. The line is 6.5 to 7. Jay Will says, Jay Williams, former Duke star and current ESPN analyst, going to be he's a guy who says it's going to be an explosion for Villanova. They're going to do the same thing to Michigan they did to Kansas and win by big double digits. Are you in the same camp? Do you feel like this is really Villanova's game to lose and it really won't be close?
I do think Villanova is going to win, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than people expect it to be. I know a lot of people have penciled Villanova in, and they're saying, you know, based on this Kansas game, they're just going to replicate the same performance. But I don't think so. I think it's going to be very close. I think it's actually going to be a dogfight. And one thing that I think goes a little underrated is that Jay Wright has said before that John Beilein is the toughest coach he's ever faced against. And the way that Michigan plays defensively, we've seen Villanova struggle. For example, in that Texas Tech game in the Elite Eight, Villanova barely got anything going in the second half. They were fortunate that their first half lead, where they had a 13-point lead going into the break, was enough to sustain itself going into the end. And although that final score was not indicative of how the game really went, we've seen Villanova go ice cold before. Michigan has the potential to make Villanova do that. The way they play defense is fantastic, especially taking away the three-point game, which is the backbone of Villanova's offense. So I think Villanova will win, but it's definitely going to be a lot closer than most people expect it to be.
Well, I'll tell you what, with Jalen Brunson, the newly crowned Naismith Award winner as the Player of the Year, taking on Xavier Simpson, who, by the way, is a Northwest Ohio guy, so we certainly want to give him love and support. But he, the way he played in the semifinals, I let's just hope that Michigan's defense can find a way to keep these guys in check, because if Jalen Brunson continues to go on and you get shooting like you did from Pascal and others, it's going to be a tough one for the Wolverines. But really good stuff. Thank you for breaking it down. Enjoy your time down there in San Antonio, Eugene, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on, and I hope you guys enjoy it tonight.
You got it. Thanks much. Eugene Rippe, he is the managing editor there of VU Hoops. That's VillanovaUniversityHoops.com, which is a part of SB Nation. And, yeah, Jalen Brunson just yesterday, Kush, I don't know if you saw that, was actually announced as a Naismith Player of the Year.
I did catch that.
Yeah, and again, Xavier Simpson, you know, the fact that Michigan, maybe this is a good sign, the fact that Michigan was able to play as well as they did and win, despite their point guard, Xavier Simpson, who's a youngster himself, just a sophomore from Lima, obviously, we know this, you know, having a rough time as he was 0 for 6 from the floor and 0 for 3 on the way to 0 points in that game against Loyola. He's really going to have his work cut out for him now, trying to chase down and try to put some pressure on Brunson from Villanova, the Player of the Year. Okay, let's get a top of the hour local sports center coming your way now. On the flip side, we're going to stay on the college basketball scene, where we're going to look at things from the Michigan perspective. And I will ask our next guest about Xavier Simpson and what other guys are going to have to do to pick up the slack for the Wolverines. Trevor Woods, contributor to MazeandBrew.com, will be joining us when we come back right here on ESPN 106.5.
Back to Wagner, catch and shoot three on the way, rims it home. Couple of threes for Michigan. Wagner with his 60th of the year. Simmons right side for Matthews. Decks it and drives. Leans. Got some contact. Hit it, and he's fouled.
Charles Matthews, been aggressive.
Launches a three. It's short. Rebound Wagner. He'll put it back up. Up the small square and through. Wagner's having himself a day deep inside. Left-handed dribble drive. Floater from the left baseline. No good. Rebound. Ingram. Put back is good. Nobody boxed him out. And Loyola's got the momentum. And the crowd behind him. Robinson touch pass. Simmons in a corner for three. Good! Jerron Simmons knocks it down. His sixth triple of the year. And Michigan pulls to within six. Rebound Rockmont. Quickly to Robinson. Back to Rockmont left corner. To Robinson on the wing. Strokes a three. Nails the three. Big triple from Duncan Robinson. He's got two of them in the half. And Michigan's down three. Four speeds Wagner. Right short corner. A double team comes. He dribbles away from it. Step back three. Get in there. Got it! Tied up at 47 because Mo Wagner continues to carry the load. To Wagner, open for three, didn't want it. Bounce pass from Matthews. Slithers inside, and a reverse layup is good. And a timeout for Porter Moser. Michigan starting to run their offense to perfection. Simpson into the front court. Gives it to Matthews. Underhand lead. Poole eyes the three. Missed it short. Wagner with a follow-up. It's good, and he's fouled. Kick out. Wagner straightaway three. Yes, sir.
And Mo Wagner has been huge here today.
Poole comes up with it. Michigan is going to win it. They'll have the last dance in San Antonio and play for a title Monday night. They beat Loyola 69-57.
We're elated to get a win like that and the way we did it. You know, we see some really good defenses in the Big Ten. We saw some great defense. They're a little bit smaller at the forward positions, and they can really get into you and guard. And they really gave us problems in the first half. But the second half, after we saw how their actions, then we needed to make some shots. And we couldn't make them for a while when we did. And our young guys came in there. All of a sudden, we took off like crazy. Everybody's really happy. We're ready to move on to the next game. I don't know if they had magic on their side. They're good. They wouldn't be here if they were not good. In the NCAA tournament, everybody's on a neutral floor. They don't get the opportunity to play home games against schools like Michigan, and they probably never will. So as a result, they're good, but people don't know how good they are until you see them out there. They stopped being a Cinderella when they got to the 16, to me. There's so little difference between the 4 seed and the 13 seed. It's much smaller a difference than you would think, than numbers.
I thought Loyola Chicago had a chance to win the ball game. They were in the ball game, but the reality of the matter is Michigan is way more talented. They were 1 of 10 from the 3-point line today and still found a way to win the game by double digits. That says something about the talent of Michigan.
We might be put in tougher positions with the way Michigan plays defense. We've got to figure out a way to move without the ball to create space to be able to do that. The first time you walk out there, it is breathtaking. It really is. When all the lights go out and they do the introductions and you just see the crowd, it's your heart's pumping. I hope against Michigan that when the lights go out and that awesome pregame gets going, that it's not as overwhelming as it was in 16.
Michigan plays a physical brand of defense. They do a great job of running you off the three-point line, and they're a very good defensive rebounding team. But it's going to be a unique challenge taking on Villanova, because Villanova can shoot it from 5 different spots on the floor all the time. And they've got 5 guys that have made over 50 threes on the season. And that's going to be the real challenge. Is Mo Wagner, the big guy for Michigan, going to be able to guard out on the floor all game long? Because he's going to have to chase somebody like Eric Paschal or Omari Spellman all game long. If Villanova shoots it anywhere near like they did against Kansas, I think it's going to be all she wrote. Michigan's going to have to do a better job than Kansas did of getting off to a better start, and certainly they're going to have to run the Wildcats off that three-point line, because they are deadly from the three-point line.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, I think Jay Billis, there at the end of those comments, I think he's all over it. If Villanova shoots anywhere close to the way they shot against Kansas, that's going to be all she wrote. That's going to be what shoots out the lights, literally, for the Wolverines in this championship game. Welcome as we get into hour number 2 now at 14 minutes past 4 o'clock. Don't forget, you are less than 2 hours away now from the next chance at $1,000, courtesy of the 4K a day giveaway from your friends here at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. 4 times a day, 9 a.m., noon, 3 o'clock, and as mentioned, 6 o'clock. Listen for a keyword during those times. Then you'll text that keyword to 95819, and you could win $1,000 up to 4 times per day. The 4K a day giveaway right here on Toledo's sports leader, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. More information on that contest is online at 106.5theticket.com. Okay. A really good conversation, obviously, last half hour. It was fun talking to Eugene Rapay of Villanova, managing editor for VU Hoops. He's down there in San Antonio. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to talk with Trevor Woods, who's a contributor of the Mason Brew website, MasonBrew.com, which, of course, is a Wolverines fan site. And we've been talking to Anthony Broom and other people from Mason Brew all tournament long, and we were going to keep that up by talking to Trevor today and get a little preview from his side of things. So, yeah, I mean, you know, again, not watching Villanova on a regular basis every day this year. I didn't really pay a ton of attention to what their style was and what their, you know, what Jay Wright's philosophy was. But, boy, Eugene really lit it up when he pointed out their mantra is shooting the three ball. I mean, that's what it's all about for them. And I'm trying to find exactly what that phrase was here, because it was on their actual – VU Hoops site. This is what they do. It's about firing up threes. They're to shoot them up, sleep in the streets. That's what it is. It's their mantra. Shoot them up, sleep in the streets. And there's a pretty good piece on VUHoops.com breaking down Villanova's record-breaking Final Four. And, Kush, this is a good time to go back to couple of wild stats that we had in the first hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I only kind of read the Mo Wagner one because we were short on time
right there
while we got to Eugene. So let's hit this real quick. This is what Michigan is facing. In that win, the team that preaches shoot 'em up, sleep in the streets, hit on a record 18 three-pointers. A record for the Final Four. That's a given. 18 threes? Yeah, nobody has ever done that in a Final Four game. But it's the second most in any tournament game ever. And I'm taking that back to the 1990 Loyola Marymount teams with Hank Gathers and Bo Kimball and all of those guys who kind of changed basketball for a period of time. And, you know, you're a little young, Jim. Maybe you remember this, maybe you don't. Loyola Marymount back in...
this was 88, 89, 90 kind of time.
Yeah, 90. Period. 90 is the one that I'm thinking of specifically. Yeah.
Watching it live, I vaguely remember this at best, but I've seen the Guru of Go, ESPN 30 for 30 on the whole thing.
Yeah,
I encourage those
to
check that out if you're a youngin' like me.
There you go. That's a good idea. And in fact, I did not see that 30 for 30, and now that you brought it up, I'm going to have to make sure to make a point of finding that and seeing it because that team was unbelievably fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
What they did was they essentially said, defense is for schmucks. we're not going to play it. We're going to let them go down there and get their twos, and we're going to have our guys positioned strategically up the sidelines and then into the wings, and we're going to trade twos for threes. We'll give you a two, and we're going to shoot a three. It's just that simple. And then we're going to outscore you somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 to 70 or 130 to 100. You're going to score a ton, but we're going to score more because three is worth more than two, and we trust our three-point shooters. I mean, it was transformational. It was insane. It was ludicrous. It can't happen. No way. That's the kind of the belief that, you know, everybody thought that Paul Westhead was a nut when he kind of employed that philosophy. But it worked for an extended period of time. And ironically enough, Jim, you know who it worked against?
Michigan.
It worked against Michigan. 1990, Loyola Marymount, they had a historic win in that season against Michigan. They beat Michigan 149 to 115 in the second round of the tournament in 1990. And again, this is 1 year after Michigan just won the national championship.
Right, it was Steve Fisher's first year, and they were the defending champs at the time.
That's exactly right. And Michigan scored 115 points. That's pretty doggone amazing. And
in college,
lost by 34. How do you lose by 34? They did, because this is just how Loyola Marymount was. My point to that was this. When you find out that what I just said about Villanova, who's facing Michigan, ironically, tonight, that 18 threes that they just made in the semifinal against Kansas is the second most in any tournament game ever. That takes into account those wild, rapid-fire shooting Loyola Marymount teams back in that era. So just kind of an interesting thing. Yeah, I'm just looking at their point totals in some of those games. In 89, they lost in the first round, 120 to 101 to Arkansas, employing that strategy. Then they won in 1990, first round against New Mex, 111 to 92. Then they blitzed Michigan, as mentioned, 149-115. Then somehow in the Sweet 16, their threes weren't falling, but somehow they played a little defense, and they beat Alabama 62 to 60. And then in the Elite Eight, they got out there and started firing it again, and didn't play any defense again, and UNLV beat them 131 to 101. I just love saying some of those stories. It's bringing back memories for me, too. That was my college graduation year, and I remember watching these games, but they lost to the Running Rebs by 30. They put up 101 and lost by 30.
So yeah, I'm looking at their whole season, and I only see four games where they did not score 100 points.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about. Paul Westhead was the coach. Remember, he used to be the Lakers coach when Magic Johnson was drafted.
He's the one Magic drove out of town.
And Magic got him fired. That's exactly correct. Magic got him fired, and Pat Riley came in, and the rest was history as far as that goes. I'm trying to see just real quick if I can grab any more stats from those teams. It was really amazing. That was also obviously the sad, tragic year that Hank Gathers, their best superstar, All-American player, probably would have been a terrific NBA player. excuse me, that was the year Hank Gathers collapsed and died on the court.
Right.
One of the most shocking moments in the history of college basketball, maybe in the history of sports. He just collapsed and died on the court, and as you know, people probably know Bo Kimble, who was his best friend on that court and their second best player, who did go on to play in the NBA for a bit, shot his free throws through the rest of that tournament, his first three free throw left-handed in honor of his friend Hank Gathers. But yeah, anyway, I don't want to get too far bogged down in that. The point is, this Villanova team that the Wolverines are going to face tonight can shoot. And if Michigan, here's the thing. Is Michigan's defense good enough to get hands in the faces of shooters all around the arc the way they seem to have for Villanova? I mean, Jim, just briefly, looking again at this Villanova box score from the win over Kansas, okay? You have 1, 2, 3, 5. You've got all five starters took at least five threes.
Right.
And one guy off the bench took five threes. That's six guys taking at least five threes. That means you have shooters at every spot on the floor, including the big, including the center slash power forward, Omari Spellman, who's a great shooter, by the way. Can Michigan possibly close out on all of those shooters? You know, and that's not to disrespect Loyola of Chicago. How about that? Now I'm going to sit here and almost said the Loyola Marymount since we were talking about it in 1990. The Loyola of Chicago team, not to disrespect them. They obviously have some good players and really good players to finish 32-6 and make it to the Final Four, but they didn't have shooters all over the place the way Villanova does.
Right.
If they can't close out on all five of those, they're going to get destroyed. And if they are able to close out, it's going to open up the inside for a guy like Spellman who take people to the basket.
Yep.
But just to throw this, you know, perfect storm of Villanova offense that you saw as they put up 95 on Kansas into a little bit more context. Pascal led the way. The forward, Pascal, led the way with 24 points on 10 of 11 shooting.
That's ridiculous.
Let me say that again. Yeah, that's right. And it's not, you know, he's not a center who's doing a bunch of dunking. Eric Pascal was 10 of 11 and 4 out of 5 from 3. Just in case. And by the way, 3 assists and 3 rebounds to throw in there. 18 for the Naismith National Player of the Year, Jalen Brunson. He had 18 points and 6 assists. He was 7 out of 14, and he took 8 threes and made 3 of those. Then you have Spellman, the big man, 6'10", 6'9.5", 6'10", redshirt freshman from Cleveland, North Royalton out there, Ohio. Spellman had 15 points and 13 rebounds. He was 6 out of 15 and 3 out of 9. So I'm focusing more on the latter column, the three-point shooting, just to kind of talk about what the challenge is going to be for John Beilein's group guys tonight. Off the bench, playing 28 minutes, was DiVincenzo, who put up Dante DiVincenzo put up 15 on the board, along with 8 rebounds. He was 3 for 5 from 3 and 4 for 6 overall. And then you have the pedestrian 10-point guys. Booth was 2 for 6, and Bridges was 2 for 5 from 3. And these guys each put up 10. So they had 6 guys in double figures, and they had 6 guys who took more than 5 threes. And overall, they were 18 out of 40 from 3. That's 45% shooting, which is obviously phenomenal. And if they can even approach something close to that against Michigan tonight, I honestly don't know what Michigan is going to do, Coach.
No, and the only thing that Michigan can hang their hat on going into this one is the fact that they play as pretty much everyone is at least acknowledging, even when, you know, the next breath today they've been saying, well, and Villanova's still going to probably win going away, is that Michigan is one of the better defensive teams, you know, in the country. We've seen that play out, you know, a whole bunch of times, but yeah, I want to throw another, you know, angle at this, too. All the names that you were just mentioning, except for Spellman, ironically the Cleveland area kid out of North Royalton.
Yeah.
This is not a team filled with one-and-done guys. There's 4 freshmen on this Villanova roster. I'm looking it up right now. Spellman's the only one who starts. Everybody else are...
And he's a redshirt guy.
And he's
in his second year with the program.
Right, precisely. You know, Brunson, National Player of the Year, you know, junior. So the rest of the guys in the starting lineup all seem to be juniors or even seniors. Basically, not one-and-done freshman-type guys. That's something else that I think needs to be getting, you know, as we go forward in the one-and-done era that we're in, that that's not what Villanova and Jay Wright does. I think that tip of the cap worthy, given the conversations we've all been having in recent times.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to correct that for the record a little bit there, Jim. Not to dispute you, but I would have thought and said the same thing looking at the roster had I not heard Seth Greenberg today talking about this, because it was brought up on one of the
ESPN. Good, at least somebody's bringing it up then.
Yeah, on one of the ESPN championship game preview programs this morning, somebody brought up that, you know, what you notice here is Jay Wright doesn't recruit the one-and-done guys. And as I've said many times, I think what we're starting to see, well, that's why we saw some of the mid-majors and some of the other teams that are middle of the conference in the Power 5 conferences rising up, because they're able to build more chemistry with guys who were there longer and playing 2, 3, 4 years for a coach and buying into the system. So I was with you 100% of the way with everything you were just saying about Jay Wright. Except for the fact that I heard Seth today say, no, what you don't understand is Jay Wright does recruit one-and-dones, just like Coach K, just like Calipari, just like Williams and so many of the other guys. He just hasn't gotten them. That's the bottom line. It's not like he doesn't want these one-and-done five-star blue-chip guys. He just hasn't gotten them. They're going to the Dukes and the Kentuckys and some of the other places that we're talking about, which leaves him with the guys that he does get who are there for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and suddenly it's bearing fruit. So it's almost like a blessing, you know, in a manner of speaking, that he didn't win the recruiting battles for some of these guys, because the Brunsons, who's a junior, you know, these guys can be there for 2 or 3 or 4 years and actually, you know, buy into the system, learn to play with one another. And as I've said many times in this program, rather than being great, establishing greatness, there's a difference. The one and dones can be great. The Marvin Bagley Jr. from Duke, who had a great freshman season, first team All-American, and he's on his way to the NBA now. He was great. But they couldn't establish greatness at Duke because he's not there for a sophomore year or a junior year.
Right.
And on down the line we go. Jay Wright should be commended, excuse me, for winning with the guys that he is and for winning the championship 2 years ago and for being on the verge of doing it again today. But we probably shouldn't just say he's smarter than the other guys. He's not going for the one and done. Seth Greenberg says, yes, he is. He just hasn't landed any of them yet. So we'll see. You know, and if he wins tonight, 2 championships in 3 years, which, by the way, that was another wild stat, and I don't know if I can pull it back up again because I just heard it today. If they win, they will be only the second team since the tournament expanded, maybe, to win 2 titles in 3 years. Something like that. I can't recall it exactly, but at any rate, if he
wins, I'm thinking about it. Yeah, there haven't been any real, the only 2 back-to-backs in that time frame were Duke with Christian Laettner and the 2 Florida teams, one of which beat Ohio State. Those are the only ones that won back-to-back titles since the tournament expanded. So 2 out of 3 years, I think Villanova would be the third one joining the other two.
That might be what the stat it was that I heard, and I didn't even remember the Florida part, but that might be it. But at any rate, now if he wins this one, now who knows? Maybe those one-and-done guys will start coming now and saying, I want to play for those guys. You know, we can win a title there real quick on my 1 year stay in college basketball before I go to the pros. I don't know if that will be a good thing or not. I don't know if Jay Wright will want to change the way things are done or not. But according to Greenberg, he isn't necessarily bucking the trend, the system that some are having of recruiting those 5-star guys that you know are only going to be around for a couple of semesters. But he just hadn't been successful yet.
No, and that's a very interesting part. No, I had not heard that from the former Hokie coach, but, you know, I almost wonder, does a random little factoid like that, and even though, we had this discussion last hour, I brought it up to Eugene from V Hoops, I still kind of have this in my head that, though his name might come up, I don't think he's thought of on those same, type of levels. I think he should be, is partly why I asked it to begin with. Mm-hmm. That feels like one of those anecdotal pieces of evidence that why he might not at times be looked at as one of those true top echelon coaches, because he doesn't get those guys right now. He loses out on them, as Seth Greenberg mentioned.
But again, not to be too disagreeable on this, but have any of those guys won 2 in the last 3?
Right.
he may prove to be outsmarting them, because they're getting those one and dones and it isn't working out for him. And here's Jay Wright not getting those one-and-dones, if you believe Seth Greenberg. And he's going to win, perhaps tonight, his second championship in 3 years. So who really is, you know, the blue blood, the elite, the best of the best kind of coach?
No, and that's good. I love these, you know, these types of conversations, you know, going forward. And it'll be here no matter what happens with this one tonight.
Yeah, no question about it. So we've got some really interesting things to discuss. Is this Villanova offense that will be going up against the Wolverines tonight, is it the best offense we have ever seen? CBS broke that question down and said Saturday night was very convincing in that regard. They scored a ridiculous 1.34 points per possession against Kansas. The 18 threes were a Final Four record. 66 threes in the tournament is also unmatched in the event's history, and they still have a game to go. Even if it's not the best offense ever, it's right up near the top, at least in the Ken Pom era since 2001-2002. From a statistical perspective, the only team whose offense was more efficient than this year's Nova was Wisconsin in 2014-15, but that Badgers team didn't win the national title. If Villanova puts up 75 or more on a top three defensive team like Michigan and wins it all, it's going to have a really good case as the best offensive team ever. Can Michigan's three-point defense, however, push Nova out of its comfort zone? That's what I opened up this segment with talking about. Even if they are able to close out and play great defense on the perimeter the way they did against Loyola, and really they have against a lot of teams in this tournament, is that going to be enough to stop them? Because Villanova has so much depth and the ability to score inside. They're not just that outside point, outside shooting team. Loyola Chicago had their worst three-point shooting showing of the entire season against Michigan at 1-for-10. John Beilein's team has to get something similar on Monday night to have a shot. Villanova making 35% or better of its threes would almost certainly spell doom for Michigan, which is 1-5 all-time in the national title game. I think I said 1-6 before. My apologies. 1-5 in national championship games. The defense is the key for Michigan. Try and extend the three-point line and hope that they we'll start taking them from deeper if you get out there to close out. Could be the key for Michigan. But, again, they have such a great interior game with the likes of Spellman that wouldn't even necessarily be a surefire winner, especially if Mo Wagner is not in there. Excuse me. Especially if Mo Wagner is not down low to protect the rim, because he's going to be guarding a guy like Spellman, who is a great three-point shooter. You bring his big 7-foot body away from the basket to guard Spellman and watch and see how many other guys are able to penetrate for Villanova. And it'll take a lot of help side defense from Michigan's other defenders to try to stop that. Okay, we're pretty much exclusively staying on the national championship game tonight in honor of the Wolverines, who are in the title game now for the second time in 5 years. They were in the title game against Louisville back in 2013. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk with Trevor Woods, who's a contributor to MazeAndBrew.com. That's a Michigan site. They cover the Wolverines very closely. We'll get his thoughts on the matchup tonight as we continue right after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, it is indeed. I was hoping to hear from Jay Billis there again, Mr. Cushlin. A little lead-in to the conversation with our friend from MazeAndBrew.com, Trevor Woods, who joins us now, because Jay Billis had something profound to say in the montage that we played at the top of this hour. And that, of course, has to do with this uncanny three-point shooting of the Villanova Wildcats. But let's go ahead and bring that up with Trevor Woods now. Trevor is a contributor to MazeAndBrew.com. We've been talking to MazeAndBrew really every step of the way through this Michigan tournament run, both the Big Ten tournament, which, of course, they won, surprising the top two teams in the conference on the way to that title, Michigan State and Purdue, but also all the way through the national tournament, and everything comes to a head tonight in the championship game against Nova. Trevor, thanks for the time this evening or this afternoon. How are you?
Thank you. Real good to be here. I'm doing well.
Good to have you, Trevor. I was reading a lot of your work on, as well as your colleagues on MazeAndBrew.com, and I want to start right with what I just mentioned to Jim. And I don't know if we have Jay there, but Jay Billis was one of the many commentators picking Villanova to win this game tonight, in large part because of that three-point proficiency and efficiency with which they fire. We spoke with somebody who covers the Wildcats closely, and they talked about their mantra, shoot them up, sleep in the streets. They just believe in hoisting from distance, and they made 18 out of 40 in the semifinal against Kansas. If they are even close to half that proficient against Michigan, it's going to be very, very difficult for the Wolverines tonight, Trevor.
Oh, definitely. Even if they make nine three-pointers in a game is exceptional. Villanova can strike fire any given moment on any given night. There's no doubt about it. They're the best team in the country, certainly the best offense in the country. But the question is, does great defense beat great offense? Does defense win a championship tonight, or will an offense win a championship? This is probably the best defense Villanova has faced. Obviously, against Kansas, they looked unstoppable. 18 three-pointers, as you said. The counter to that would be two things. Michigan's defense, they push opponents off the three-point line. It's going to be a bit harder tonight than against Kansas, getting their three-pointers off cleanly, uncontested, open looks. There will be hands and faces, and Michigan just plays a different brand of defense than Kansas. In the Elite Eight, this wasn't a good three-point shooting team. So there's always that element of what have you done for me lately, which rightfully so. But Villanova only went 3 of 24 from three-point against Texas Tech. So as we see in the tournament, there can be ugly games. There can be high-scoring games. Each game's unpredictable. And, they could hit 9, 18 three-pointers again, or they could go 3 for 24. We'll see soon enough.
Okay, you make a very good point about the kind of defense Kansas plays, for example, versus the kind of defense Michigan can play, which is one of the top three defenses in the country and certainly one of the best perimeter defensive teams in the country, and they haven't faced that before. The counter to that, if you're looking just to kind of, you know, cover this from all angles, is Michigan clearly hasn't seen anything like what Villanova can throw at them before. As a matter of fact, Michigan, the first team in tournament history to make the final game without playing a team seeded higher than fifth. Villanova is a very different animal than Montana, than Nevada, than Houston, than Florida State, quite obviously, than Loyola as well. Is Michigan ready for that sudden change?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. John Beilein called them the Golden State Warriors. So when you're going to compare a team to a college team to the NBA National Championships, there's a reason for it. No, they haven't faced a team as good as Villanova in this tournament, not by far. A lot of people are saying that Michigan really hasn't faced anybody, the easiest road ever to get to a national championship. I don't see it that way. Any road is hard. That's why we see upsets happen and unpredictable happen. Michigan has played some darn good teams this year, though. They played Purdue. They played Michigan State. They played North Carolina. They beat Michigan State twice, and that team, a lot of people picked them to win it all just a couple weeks ago. So that was a good counter you gave me. Villanova, yes, they have a lot of scores. Six guys who average over 10 points a game. Anybody can beat you. They can beat you from all points of the floor, in and outside. But, Michigan does have a good defense, so that would be the counter to that. Villanova hasn't played a team with as good a defense as Michigan's.
No question about it, and I think it would be very disrespectful for anybody to say that Michigan has had an easy road to get here. No way. I mean, look at how many teams have had quote-unquote easy games against teams seeded lower than fifth that lost. You know, talking about top two, three, four seeds who are losing to these higher-seeded teams, and well, lower in the scale and higher in terms of actual numbers, but losing to 10, 11, 12 seeds. So I think it's disrespectful to say, you know, it's an easy road that they've had. But again, just the fact that nobody has ever gotten to the title game playing without beating somebody higher than a fifth seed is just a thing. It's a stat, and it's something that bears watching. I do want to hear this clip real quick. Jim says he's got it for us here. Jay Billis talking about the three-point shooting of Villanova. I want to stay on that for one more question for you, Trevor. Go ahead, Jim.
Michigan plays a physical brand of defense. They do a great job of running you off the three-point line, and they're a very good defensive rebounding team. But it's going to be a unique challenge taking on Villanova because Villanova can shoot it from five different spots on the floor all the time. And they've got five guys that have made over 50 threes on the season. And that's going to be the real challenge. Is Mo Wagner, the big guy for Michigan, going to be able to guard out on the floor all game long? Because he's going to have to chase somebody like Eric Paschal or Omari Spellman all game long. If Villanova shoots it anywhere near like they did against Kansas, I think it's going to be all she wrote. Michigan's going to have to do a better job than Kansas did of getting off to a better start. And certainly they're going to have to run the Wildcats off that three-point line because they are deadly from the three-point line.
Trevor, let's talk about that part of this. The fact that, you know, Michigan has been great at closing out on the perimeter against other teams that don't have five shooters on the court at the same time. Because nobody has that. I mean, that's just, you know, give credit where it's due there. That's You know, it's not anything about Michigan's schedule or anything else. Nobody has five shooters with at least 50 threes on the season on the court at the same time. You can close out on a team that has two or three good shooters and still defend inside with a Wagner. But if you've got to have your seven-footer out there chasing Spellman or Pascal because they're shooters, you know, and then let's say you do close out at five different spaces all at the same time, you are just opening yourself up for backdoor cuts and dribble drives and everything else to go in without any shot blockers or protectors inside. That's the unique challenge that Villanova would present anybody, Michigan or anybody else for that matter.
Oh, definitely. When you have, like you said, five guys who can drain threes, it creates spacing on the floor. It kicks Wagner outside to where he has to defend the three-point line, and could potentially create some opportunities for Villanova inside. What Michigan is going to have to do tonight on defense is be feisty, show heart, show quickness. They have to just be on those guys an inch away, kind of like, I know you're a football guy too, kind of like man press coverage in football, to where you almost have to have a hand on them at all times. You cannot let up, and you just always have to be on your man, whether they're playing man coverage on defense or in zone. Just stick to your area, keep your feet moving, can't be lackadaisical, can't even take a millisecond off. Otherwise, a team like Villanova will expose you, will capitalize, and will beat you.
Trevor Woods is our guest. He's a contributor to MazeandBrew.com. Let me ask you about the point guard matchup, just simply because of, well, how large the disparity would seem to be. Jalen Brunson just got the Naismith Award. He's the player of the year in college basketball. Michigan's point guard, Xavier Simpson, just scored 0 points in 26 minutes against Loyola in the semis. And I say that not to pick on a Northwest Ohio kid. He's from Lima. So we love him, and we want to see him do well. But it's just reality. He had a rough one against Loyola. Brunson is the best that there is in the country. They're both going to run their respective teams in terms of the offense and have to guard one another. How does Simpson keep Brunson in check and then also put enough pressure on him to make him play a little bit of defense, something he was not able to do to generate any offense against Loyola?
Yeah, Simpson's always a wild card. You never know what guy's going to show up on a given night. Sometimes you have the guy who's 0 for 6 and creates more turnovers than buckets. Other nights, he's setting the world ablaze with three-pointers, having a good drive to the basket, and dishing out assists. What he's going to do against Brunson, I really don't know. It's mostly mental with him, I would say. He has a great skill set. I don't care what his stats say. His inconsistencies provide average stats, you could say. But he has big peaks and low valleys, and he can't have an 0 for 6 game tonight and turn the ball over a lot, or Michigan's going to lose. Brunson, when asked the other day, how does somebody stop you, he said to the reporters, hope I miss. And he virtually is unguardable. He does have that Steph Curry type ability to where you can be draped all over him, and there's really not a window for him to get a shot off. Somehow he does and drains it. So, I that was a great question. I really don't know.
Yeah, well, it is. It's tough. And the question is does John Beilein know what he can do to try to take some of that pressure off of Simpson and give somebody else an opportunity to try to keep Brunson in check? But, yeah, National Player of the Year, averaged 19.2 points, three rebounds, and nearly five assists a game. He has been spectacular, and he will drive the ship tonight for Villanova, as he always does. Jim Christian, go ahead, buddy.
You know, and thinking about this, too, and, we're mentioning something on the defensive side. When Michigan's on defense in this one and the shooters they can put up that might drag out Wagner and have to guard the three-point line. And I find that, you know, very fascinating in and of itself, because here's a guy who, in the Loyola game on Saturday, finally had the kind of game I think we were all hoping at some point he would have. Now he's one of only three guys ever to go 20-plus, 15-plus in a Final Four game, the other ones being Larry Bird and Hakeem Olajuwon, by the by. So now if he's going to have to focus this extra defensive effort, which is probably very, very true, the way Villanova can shoot the ball from outside, what's that going to do to Wagner on the offensive side, because, you know, again, he's been the guy that I keep watching, and I've been waiting for him offensively to have a game the way he did Saturday night. Is having to play this extra defense out front going to take away from that?
Well, he played 36 minutes the other night, and as you saw, he did just about everything. So in itself, we already saw the type of effort he can give and the endurance Wagner has. Nance and the other commentators were basically saying, how is he doing this? How can he stay out there so long doing as much as he is on both sides of the floor? I don't think, in theory anyway, that Wagner will have to do as much on both sides. He is going to need help from Simpson, Abdul-Rahman, and others to make shots, get their own rebounds. But Wagner, he can move around good, and his motor's high. He's not the traditional center to where his legs are going to burn out after 20-some minutes. I don't think endurance is going to be an issue for him.
You know, it's interesting. I wouldn't think that endurance in and of itself will be an issue for Mo Wagner, but there's 36 minutes out of 40 on a court, and there's 36 minutes out of 40 on a court. They can be two different things. If you're playing a traditional game in which you're guarding another big, he's coming down to the post, you're going down to the post on your end, sometimes stretching out to hit a three the way Wagner can do, and you're playing the game that way versus chasing a Spellman, a guy who can take you down inside and then make you rush out to the three-point line because he's deadly out there as well. And so 36 minutes of chasing a guy like that or a guy like Pascal can be a lot more draining on a guy and a guy's legs than, you know, 36 minutes against a different kind of team. And so that's the reason I don't know what to expect here with respect to Wagner, because it's going to be more of the former rather than the latter here, the chasing thing. And while it might not drain him to the point where he can't go for the full 36 or whatever Beeline has planned for him in this game and when to choose the spots to rest him, you know, it's that kind of wear and tear on your body when you're doing that can at least make the legs a little weaker and the shot starts to fall a little flatter because you're doing a little bit more work than maybe your body physically is used to over the course of any long period of time on the court.
Yeah, that is the plan from Jay Wright in Villanova. Get a guy like him tired out. Definitely most games come down to kind of like the last rounds of a boxing fight. Who's more conditioned? Who threw more jabs early on to get the other team tired out later on? So, yes, it's a different type game we're going to see tonight with the movement Wagner is going to have. He's not just going to be sitting in by the bucket and rebounding and guarding there. He's going to be everywhere. I don't think Beeline's going to change his defensive scheme much. I don't think you're going to see much help for Wagner or for Simpson on Brunson and so on. I believe that we're going to see much of the same how Michigan's defense has played throughout the year. So, yeah, it's anyone's guess, like you said, and we're going to see.
Yeah, it is. So now you're going to see. You're going to tell us, because it is a guess, to find out how they handle that. And you're right, Jay Wright is going to run him around, I'm sure. No matter who he's guarding, he's going to stretch him out and have these guys moving and try to take some because he was their only offense for a period of time on Saturday night. So how do you see it playing out? I told you before at the very beginning, I mean, some 99%, it seems like, of the analysts. And I've been listening to so many different places, you know, all over the place, from CBS to Fox to ESPN, to the various blogs and other things, and almost every college basketball analyst says Villanova in a relatively easy one tonight. What say you, Trevor Woods of AmazingBrew.com?
Well, Villanova hasn't lost a game by over 8 points all season, and Michigan hasn't lost a game by over 10 since January 18th. Michigan hasn't trailed in a game by more than 10 since January 18th. You put those factors together, and you put other ones together, you put a Beeline coach team that plays great defense, tenacity, no let-up, and you have the just sharpshooting shooters of Villanova on the floor. I think we're going to see a close game. I think we're going to see a very good national championship game. I don't know who's going to win. I'm not going to give you a prediction that in a day from now you can tell me I'm wrong, perhaps, but I that's what I expect. I expect a close game. I think anybody who's saying that Michigan's going to get destroyed is incorrect.
Well, I'll tell you what, I hope you're right. I think it could very well be a tough one for the Wolverines if that shooting is on like it was against Kansas, but it would be that way against anybody in the country. That is not a disrespect to Michigan, but more of a respect for the Villanova efficient offense. So hopefully Michigan's defense will be able to close them out, and they have a cold shooting night, and we're celebrating a Maize and Blue championship in northwestern Ohio, and yes, up there where you are in southeast Michigan and Ann Arbor as well. Trevor, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
You got it. Hey, Drive Time is coming up next right here on the ticket, so stick around for that. Then don't forget, 4K a day. Your next chance to win is 1 hour from now. It's 6 o'clock right here on the ticket. We'll see you tomorrow.